That's pretty exciting, right, Omega?
Indeed.
Yeah, right.
HIAC Talk Radio is always exciting.
Get in there.
Oh, I got it, Stevie Pick!
You will deal with Ed Atlas harshly.
Fight forever, Guardian!
I think he broke it.
Look what you made me do!
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio!
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Since I control these shows, I'm bringing this everywhere. Since, like, Shadowcast, HIAC, like, everybody involved at one point was an offshoot of Nerd Herders. And by Shadowcast, I mean me. I was the offshoot from Nerd Herders on that. And it's going to be a while before they come back because they is busy. I was actually talking to Foxy the other day. Today and yesterday. About the ghost movie and asking about time. She was like, one day off a week. I was like, gotcha. So not this week. So I'm like, got it. Understood. That's fair. But because of that, I like to spread some of the nerd stuff to other shows. And I've been waiting to get this to you. Because I know you viewed the other side of it. But I'm going to pose the question to you like I posed it to Matt and Shadowcast and anybody else on Twitter who would like to have a conversation about it. What happened to us? Not me and you. We're fine. We're married for life. What happened to not just liking and not liking something? I was going to let it go before you came on. And then I was just checking Facebook, seeing if I missed anything. Also keeping track of like two hockey games and the Phillies game. I got a hockey game up here and the Phillies game. Yeah. I'm going all over the place. And I saw one of these unnamed, unknown comic book pages comparing the Rotten Tomatoes score of The Acolyte to the Rotten Tomatoes score of The Room, as if that was the same thing. And I just was like, what are we doing here? To steal a line from Joey from Talking 215, what are we even doing here? Like, as if we haven't heard of what review bombing is. That's not a real thing. Yeah, it is. I've watched it in real time twice. Today was the anniversary of The Last Jedi, and I'll still say, and you and I might not agree, but you and I have not sent each other death threats. Not about this.
No.
I love that. One, two, Rogue One, and Last Jedi, and Sith might be my favorite Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed of that.
There's nothing to be ashamed of.
No, of course not. But there is when somebody is a young woman and being told to do very bad things to herself that results in unaliving or being threatened with rape or worse, which is not much worse than rape. So you put two and two together, folks who are listening, over a television show somebody likes. What the fuck happened to us?
Social media happened to us, unfortunately. When we didn't like something, or if we did like something that no one else liked, that was the end of it. But now, expressing your opinion on a place where you can express your opinion, it's not only met with derision, but threats and violence and I don't know what I experienced something similar on my other website. I don't know what it is about our culture. And when I say our culture, I mean our pop culture, because Star Wars fans, you know, the fans that like the Empire or the Rebellion is one thing, but now you're threatening someone who, like, you both like the same stuff. I mean, it's Star Wars. So if someone likes a show from a Star Wars story and you don't, that means that a person has to die. And one of the people that is the biggest Star Wars fan that I know, you know, ever, and that's covering a lot of ground, and her love for Star Wars knows no bounds. And for her to be feeling like her life is in danger simply for liking a show. I don't know where we went wrong. I can point a finger at the divide that exists in this country right now, and how some people think it's somehow okay to threaten people because people in high offices have done that on a daily basis. Will say, well, if it's okay for that guy to threaten someone, then it's okay.
That guy's the biggest pussy in the world.
Yeah, but he said it though. So, you know, yeah. If co-leader says it, then it's okay for all of us to just follow through with threatening someone, even if we're on the same. That's what I don't get. You're on the same side. So you both love Star Wars. So what's the point of we both like the Marvel universe. So who cares if this character isn't, or it is a woman, or these characters are gay? Don't you like the comics? Isn't that why you read them in the first place? Is it that bad that one of the characters is gay, or a character that was formerly a man is now a woman, or something like that, or even black? No, I don't know.
Not black, Craig.
Yes, our Captain America is one of those.
What?
But Dan, what I would say, I didn't get anywhere near the vitriol over a Captain America being black than I did with posting something for Pride Month.
Yeah.
On the same page.
I mean, I helped with that for you.
Yeah, thank you for that. But it still baffles me I expect it. It's like, well, I expect, you know, during Black History Month when I post a black superhero every day, some type of, you know, pushback. I expected the very next month when I posted a female superhero every day for Women's History Month. But posting for Pride Month, my God, that's the button. That's the last straw. That's the one you can't get past. That's the trigger. Wow. Definitely didn't see that coming.
I wish Ash was here right now, here talking about her behind her back.
Ash, I do love you, and thank you for your private messages on Twitter. Because I wasn't aware. I saw one of her posts and her respond to it, but I didn't know that it was until she sent me the screenshots. I didn't know it had gotten that bad.
Yeah, nobody really believes me until they actually see it. And I'm like, I ain't just talking. Like, she is getting that. And let's call it right now. For you, I'm going to try to address this polite, because I don't have a polite bone in my body when it comes to this prick. So I'll just call you Prick. The fans of the Prick, Star Wars Theory, she didn't say that it was his fault or that it was his. She didn't say it was his fault or he was the one that was pushing people to do it. She asked this man, this grown man with a very, very prominent chin, to take responsibility as a leader in the Star Wars community, whether we like him or not. He is. I mean, every time I look at his account, he has to tell me, right? The first thing I see is 3.3 million people. That's wonderful. Lane won't piss on you when you're dead, but that's fine. It's not a threat. I mean, in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sooner or later. No, we're not doing the death threat thing. She asked you to be a leader in the community and say, hey, guys, while I'm sitting here raging and punching the desk and throwing things about Star Wars, a show made for children, that's what George Lucas said 40 fucking years ago. While I'm doing that, try not to threaten anybody's lives. We can't do that. Just like a certain goofy hair, small hand, dumb talking motherfucker running for office, felon. He can't say that because that would alienate 98% of his fucking fan base. So he can't say it. He can't tell these people to back off. And I don't want to make that comparison on Twitter and have them use it. But that's the reason. that is his ilk. He has to keep the masses angry. That's what pays his bills.
Yes.
You know? But when it gets down to it, it's a very simple thing to just go, hey, y'all, perhaps not the death threats.
Yeah. We don't have to like the same. Yeah, we don't have to like the same thing, or we can have a differing opinion on a TV show. But again, with the fact that we're all in the same universe, we're all in Star Wars, and that's what I don't get. If why you would want to unalive someone simply for how they feel about something else within the Star Wars universe.
I don't think it's a close fight anymore. I used to lump Ghostbusters and Star Wars fandoms in as the same because, mm-hmm. well, you saw Answer the Call and how many people just let that go. I think Star Wars has taken the lead. I think it is worst fandom in the world.
Yeah. Kelly Marie Tran. Why did she have to?
That's exactly what I was about to bring up. Yep. Kelly Marie Tran, past the fact that she sounded like she was a fan.
Yeah.
Past the fact that she's a fantastic actress. And for those who thought she was never going to work again, idiot. Number three, past the fact that she just took a job.
Yeah.
The amount of hate, vitriol, the words, just death threats. Threatens sexual assault. I'll say it. This is my show. Don't censor me. Threatening sexual assault, threatening violence or worse, because you didn't like Rose. And you know what? The funny Ash and I always make the observation is none of these guys really respond to dudes on.
Oh no,
you only respond to women. You notice a pattern. I'm like, yep, no, that's incel.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Sounds about white. You're, and by the way, as they're saying, you're the one that blamed Star Wars Theory. No, she didn't. Again, learn how to read. Learn, first of all, read, take, read, and comprehension, then learn how to read it. Two steps. Number one. Number two, nobody said you weren't allowed to watch it either. Or we're not allowed to like it. You're allowed to not like it. You're allowed to be as loud as you want about not liking it. God knows the guy who slams his desk and has tantrums about it doesn't like it. But taking it a step further by going on Twitter and reply boying to every single tweet you see praising it because somebody else liked it, get a job, a hobby, touch grass, smoke grass, watch paint dry, anything else. Anything else can be more productive than that. And we're watching it in real time with The Boys.
Yeah.
Which is cracking me up because I haven't read the source material, but I know enough about it to know that this is like, duh, this is exactly what this is. Hello. Now all of a sudden it's a problem. And that's also getting review bombed. It's really funny to see all this review bombing and people going, look, these shows suck. I'm like, oh yeah. Just like that.
Yeah, just like that.
And, I think it's very funny. It's not going to be funny for the actors and actresses, but
no,
man, is it this isn't a social experiment in real time just coming to fruition here. I've never seen another group of people who live by the facts don't care about your feelings get so far up their feelings that they threaten young women online. Just as a side note, there was a great video put out earlier today about the Star Wars community coming together. Somebody took the reins and went, let's put a video out and get ahead of this. Let's do something good for it. Ash was involved in it. Around the Galaxy, ATG Live, Star Wars podcast. And apparently that's just performative.
Really?
Which, first of all, I said, yeah, but not in the way you think it is. It's taking, God, there's like 20 Star Wars influencers and creators of this video, including Ash, going, it's all good. You don't have to like anything or everything, but we're Star Wars fans. Calm the fuck down. performative. Yeah, it's performative to get people on the same side. It's not threatening each other's lives, you moron. But I can't say anything because it's a woman online. I'll just look like a big, fat, idiot, 40-year-old man. So I didn't say anything. I wanted to get that off my chest because Badass also sent me that. And I was like, five paragraphs of saying nothing and a bunch of people agreeing with her on nothing. But anyway, just remember, folks, George Lucas made this for kids. And when you say, and another part, when you say that only Disney cared, Star Wars only became about toys when Disney owned them. Oh, my God, you're wrong. You're just
so wrong
in every way. I'm not even going back to the Phantom Menace and watching all of the toy store lines those days. I'm talking about literally, and Craig will correct me if I'm wrong, and I know I'm not, but I just, there's a reason why he has a show, three shows technically, where he covers these things. He's literally all up in here. I jokingly call him the professor about, because Professor's Mike today, he is the professor. Literally, the modern reordering of toys era started because of fucking Star Wars.
Yeah, before most of you tiny dicks were born, the first Star Wars toys were licensed in 1979, 2 years after Star Wars. And it coincided with the release of Empire Strikes Back, which they didn't know at the time would be the highest grossing sequel in the history of movies, period.
And they had to get them cataloged because they couldn't get them made fast enough.
They couldn't
get to the homes.
Yes.
That's a better way of putting that long-winded shit I just said. Thank you.
Yes. So the toy market had nothing to do with Disney. Disney was still, their biggest star was still Mickey Mouse at the time. And this was before there was even a Little Mermaid, a Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin or anything. Disney in 1979 was just Disney. Walt Disney was not even cold yet.
No, he was not.
when Star Wars took off. So no, again, a little research goes such a long way, but I know it's such a waste of time for little dicks who just want to be loud instead of right. No, Disney had nothing to do with Star Wars. Was a toy empire way before Disney.
It's so funny to watch. It's like, I mean, it's funny for me because nobody's threatening me. Well, that's not true. I did get threatened, but I was like, okay, good for you. Good luck. You know what? I'm not. Well, you're just gonna. Yeah, you know what? Sometimes I just kind of want to die. It's okay. You know. I was more mad that nobody was like, "Hey, you can't say that." Everybody was like, "Listen, I know I can handle it by myself, but you don't have to let me." Yeah. Come on. It bothers me. I have in my life gone from, and you for a longer time, gone from nobody cares about nerd shit to everybody cares about nerd shit to way too many people care about nerd shit. Stop it now, please.
Yeah. I didn't think we'd get to this part of the nerd cycle. But you know, you can kind of see when something is discovered after a long period of time, something that only a certain amount of people knew about, and then it becomes a huge thing, and then everyone's got an opinion on it. Not unlike, say, professional wrestling, when no one gave a shit about it in the early 90s, let's say, or like no one gave a shit about in the late 60s and then until the 70s was a big deal, and it went away. And then in the 80s, thanks to cable TV, it was the in thing. And next thing you know, it was on national television. And Hulk Hogan was on Sports Illustrated. And it was it. And then it wasn't.
Now we can't get rid of him.
Yeah.
Goddamn. And people also forget, and I know you'll attest to this, Mister, I have a show also based on television. The TV, when TV was brand new, what was the thing most people were watching or able to watch? It was professional wrestling, guys.
Yeah, it was
the golden age of television. Sorry.
Yes, the golden age of television. Professional wrestlers were national television stars. Luthez, Gorgeous George, Vern Gagne, because television in the 50s, wrestling didn't cost a goddamn penny. You have a not even studio. You put a camera at an arena and you film it, and then you show that on television. And you get a sponsor, General Electric, that's looking for any show to fill their network, because TV went off the air after a certain time, folks. So you had a certain amount of time to fill your allotment. You had 8 hours of television. Eight, that was it. And there was no soap operas. They were still on the radio.
Soon.
So soon. So professional wrestling was the biggest thing on television. And he had professional wrestlers on regular TV. You could find, you see Fred Blassie on the Dick Van Dyke Show. You'd see Billy Varga on Milton Berle, and Barry Leone was on the Steve Allen Show. Again, these were they were stars. They were national television stars. They were seen all over the country because of professional wrestling. Until
also clarify before baseball, football, any of the national sports that are now, it was wrestling only, folks.
Yes. So much so that in 1975, professional wrestling was the third most watched spectator sport in the country, behind baseball and college football. So that means more people saw wrestling than football and basketball and hockey combined. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Twas a big deal.
Twas a big deal. We'll get back to the history of professional wrestling, because in a perfect segue that you've helped me set up, we're going from that to being uncensored on Netflix. I don't know if you saw it, because I don't know how early that original, I was about to say Newswire went out. So, wait, what's the, oh God, help me. The news radio station in Philly. Why am I forgetting?
KYW.
KYW.
Yes.
News
radio.
News
radio.
60. They had the teletype sound effect well after the teletype went away, because people were calling in going, I know it's too quiet. Fix this shit. They hired a guy just to sit at the other mic going, a Group W Westinghouse production. News just came down the wire that once, and I forget this is even happening until today, Raw goes to Netflix. No more censorship. And this doesn't mean that, although I could pick a few, they're not going to start banging in the ring. However, please. But this does mean you're not going to hear cuss words edited out anymore. And it's going to go into our next discussion about a certain something that happened Monday. It wasn't a big deal. But yeah, the rules are coming off. Those very rules that Triple H parodied with Shawn Michaels in 97.
Yeah.
They're gone now. It's all over, folks.
And that's the thing. Because they are going to Netflix, I hope that's not an invitation. Go, well, now we can... We can start cursing, and now we can start flashing boobs. And I think if they just keep their regular product the way it is, because it's working now, then you wouldn't have to edit out the holy shit chants that we heard earlier on Raw tonight.
Let's not get hasty about no boobs. Let's do one day at a time, Craig.
I know. I'll get baby steps.
I'm just saying. I had 20 years of seeing Ric Flair's ass every Monday or Thursday. Tits are fine. I'm just saying. Go ahead.
Okay, but at least show three, maybe.
Yeah. Work up. Yeah. Ramp up to it. Show a little nipple and then be like, well, hold it.
I missed it too, the no censorship ban. I just heard about it before we went on the air. But I just hope that's not their way of saying, okay, we're gonna get into more adult storylines, because again, everything they're doing right now is working. So this is a perfect case, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and just leave it as is, and let it, if it's naturally, like if someone's fired up, if Punk wants to say shit sometime or something like that, that's fine. But when it just when it becomes the fact that there's no censorship now in a Triple H regime, I feel a lot more comfortable about that than if it was still the McMahon regime. because McMahon, oh, yeah, with no, there was no censorship, would have been a colossal train.
It looks like it's reading just basically like you and I are saying from Trips, where it's like, listen, this is just, we're going to have less people on the dump button. Like, we don't have to have people on the dump button. Keep your finger on the dump button. That doesn't have to happen anymore. If the crowd's saying, holy shit, we don't have to worry about it. If they're saying something worse, or if something happens in the ring and someone lets it slip, it's not something they have to fix in post until they got to put it up on YouTube. That's not my problem.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's a, of course, everybody said, like, well, it's going to be the Attitude Era again. I'm like, no, that just don't have to edit so much. Aren't you tired of the black and white? When it goes into a match, you know there's blood coming, and it, well, it's a black and white now. But yeah, I mean, that bothers me. I mean, it doesn't bother me where I'm like, God damn it, I can't watch this crap anymore. But I'm like, yeah, at least we'll, you know, if something happens, we're going to know. I got news for you.
Or it might be more blood. Who knows?
There might be more blood. We'll have to ask Daniel Day-Lewis. Wow, I blanked on that too. Let me just say also,
yes,
I like to, I don't like to cross the line in wrestling, but this is a fun angle, and I can't wait for Rhea Ripley to come back and beat the absolute shit out of both of them. Mm-hmm. But if I could take that vest off, please. I don't want to do anything. I just ask me.
I like the platform that Liv has on, because she's the shortest one in the ring.
Yeah, yeah. He's gonna fucking listen. All right, leave the short folks alone. It's
who's
not
gonna
my
have
fault.
A big? Who's gonna have a bigger pop when they come back, Rhea or Roman?
Right now, Rhea.
Yeah.
However, if the timeline is going the way it's going, where I literally just reading Sean Ross, SAS, probably be back on screen before SummerSlam.
Okay.
Probably, maybe. It's not definite. Don't put words in his mouth either, you fucking mouth breathers. Jesus. I Amber.
Yeah.
I can't answer that question. I don't know.
Okay.
I do not know.
I just want to get your opinion.
Both are gonna be absolutely ballistic.
Yeah.
They're just like that segment with the vest. They're just going, about this whole thing. Just little stabs here and there. Like I said, she might come back and beat the whole holy shit out of both of them. So Jacob Fatu debuting last week was amazing.
It was better
than I could have ever hoped it would be. Finally, how long has fans been talking about this, getting the whole, as much of the family together as 6 years?
Well, even they signed him what, 3 months ago?
Yeah. I don't remember at this point.
Yeah, but even like the time that it was true, then I started thinking, well, maybe it's not true. Maybe they didn't sign Jacob Fatu, because what are they waiting for? They're introducing all these other members of the Fatu and on Hawaii family, except Jacob Fatu, the one brother we do want to see. And nothing against Tama Tonga or Tangaloa, but Jacob's better than all of them, and I would put Solo in there too. What I'm going to be interested in seeing is, I think the reason they left him off for so long because they wanted to give Solo more of a run, because Jacob's a better talker than all of them.
Oh, God, yeah.
So I'm going to be interested to see what, when or if they give Jacob the mic, because once they give Jacob the mic, it's all over. Or maybe my booking idea was, my fantasy booking, that he was the tribal chief. That's who Solo was taking his orders from. And he's saying Roman's not coming back because Jacob's in charge.
It's going to be so sweet when he comes back. I love this bloodline thing. Remember when we were getting around WrestleMania and even before that, Chris and you and I were talking about how, and Derek, we were talking about how much this is the end of the road and what are they going to do next. Nothing. Bloodline's still here. It's fine. Nothing. It's okay. No problem.
Well, you remember how long it did? It seemed like Sammy was in the Bloodline. What, it felt like 10 years ago.
And he was in it for like 6 years.
Yeah, but the
I still every now and then when I'm sad, I will go to that clip of him cracking everybody up in the ring. It's not very oozy.
He's not feeling very oozy lately. But I mean, that was a full year. But that was a full year that Sammy tried to be an Uso, and he joined, and then he left. That was a full year of the Bloodline. So
this,
the fact
this is
that
the
when
stuff like Craig and I talk about things
exactly. So when Sammy finally turned on Roman, and Paul Heyman said, "We're just in the fourth inning." It's like, oh my god, that we thought that was it, and the amount of people thought Sammy was gonna go over when he fought Roman in, you know, Montreal, and even when the Sammy and Kevin won the tag team titles, thought it was over then. No,
nope.
This thing's got legs.
I love it. It's so good.
Roman and the reunited Usos. The only question would be if it's Jacob Fatu and Solo and the Tongas against Roman and the reunited Usos. Who's the fourth member?
Man, is there a cousin or something I'm not aware of yet? Something going on?
Dwayne
Johnson. Is The Rock still technically? I was going to say, is it The Rock since we're getting close to SummerSlam?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm okay with that because, listen, I don't care if it was audible and I don't care how we got there. That stuff was so awesome going back. The Rock and the Bloodline and the two. How as a wrestling fan, how can you not like that?
Mm-hmm.
That was so badass, all of them together. Oh, I want more of that, please. Yeah, and you're asking me who's going to have a bigger pot when they come back. I don't want him to not be in the Bloodline, Roman. Like, I want him to fight for his top, for his... See, when I say that, I want him to fight for his top seat back, but then he comes back and goes, I don't need that seat. I am the biggest dog in the fucking yard. What don't you understand about that? This whole yard, not just this little Bloodline yard, buddy.
Or could this be an NWO type thing? We have the Jacob Fatu Bloodline and the Roman Reigns Bloodline. NWO Black and White, NWO Red.
As much as I loved the Red and Black, please don't do that. Please don't do that. Don't do that again. Plus, I won't ever be able to get one of the shirts.
Yeah.
I'm still looking for one of the shirts.
I remember when the NWO started to proliferate, it was NWO Black and White, NWO Red, and then there was the LWO. I said it loudly. I didn't even have a podcast, but I said, all right, now it's just stupid. Now the LWO, I mean, I love all those guys, Ray and Eddie and Hoobintu and all that stuff, but, you know, it's enough is enough. But if La Parca joins, I'm down.
Yes, exactly. And what happened?
He joined it. All right, I'm in.
He joined.
Where can I get a shirt?
Fine. Yeah. God damn it.
Shirt. Yeah,
and 30 years later, fucking LWO's still here.
Yep.
It's awesome. And it's like legit. It was originally put together as a bit. It's not a bit now. Mm-mm. That's no bit. It's fantastic. I rhymed that. Let's talk about something that I really... I'm actually nervous to talk to you about because I know how you feel about these such things.
What's that?
But I've been dying to get this off my chest.
Yes.
The Wyatt Six.
Uh-huh.
With which is even better. Now it's not six. It's six.
Yes.
I messed up.
Yeah. S-I-C-K-S.
Which, buying that shirt, kind of dovetails off of our last conversation about blood. When was the last time you, and I'm asking you for a reason because I can think about six segments from just the NWA on Saturday Night Days where you saw blood, fake or not, being used in the segment like that? I'm not talking about in a fight in the ring or during a match, a backstage segment like Rick, like Magnum TA getting pummeled by Tully and Arn, or Dusty getting his arm snapped in half by the four. When was the last time you saw blood used like that graphically? Like, oh, that's a blood spatter. Because you and I are fine looking at it. I know people that wouldn't be able to look at that because they can't separate fact from fiction.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. The blood. And I was like, well, blood's not a big deal. Used like that? Yes, it was. Because I'm like, holy shit, there's murders back here. uh-oh. Also, I had to put my seatbelt on. It was reminding me to put my seatbelt on. That's my one complaint about the whole segment. We get it. Turn it off. Anyway.
Be
honest. I ain't going to shit on you. I know how you feel.
I can't stand the stuff like that. What I liked about the Wyatt family wasn't the supernatural hokey stuff. Is their entrance. They were three badass guys. You had a diamond in the rough with Brody, Luke Harper back then, but you could see how incredibly talented that guy was. They even made Braun Strowman a star, to the point. It got him over to the point where I don't know if it made him a star, but being in the Wyatt family legitimized him. One of the biggest pops ever in WWE history was when Daniel Bryan left the Wyatt family. So again, you couldn't get that kind of pop if the Wyatt family weren't over. That's what I liked about it. What I hate was all the supernatural stuff and the Firefly Funhouse and the breaking the fourth wall and that the backstage stuff. Yeah, if we had seen how they did it, how they laid everyone out, that's one thing. But just to have a roving camera of going back, and as far as the use of blood, I thought Chad Gable was shot in the head. I don't know about that blood placement. And another guy, it looked like somebody, he was laying down. I couldn't make out everyone. But all the blood splatter was behind him on the wall. So it looks like he shot himself in the mouth and his brains blew in the back of the head. That's my only criticism. It's like,
I can tell you a gunshot wound doesn't look like that, but that's neither here nor there. I get what your point is. Yes.
Yeah. But it my point is, yes, what made the NWA Saturday Night backstage stuff so effective was when it actually happened, when you actually saw it. When Jimmy Garvin turned face after the Midnight Express burned Ronnie Garvin, and he goes running into the heel locker room to choke Cornette, and that was the first time people were like, oh my god, Jimmy Garvin and Ronnie Garvin are brothers. That was huge because we got to see it.
Cornette got choked.
Yes. But that kind of backstage stuff, yes, I'm all for. But you're showing, it's like when they back in the Attitude Era, we need a camera backstage and we see God laid out in the car driving off, and we're supposed to put together that, oh, he got run over. Or Austin was, hit by a car with a guy who was driving with blonde, but we didn't see who. That kind of thing always leaves me cold. And all the supernatural stuff, I hate it.
The only thing that was repeating in my head when you said that was Rey Mysterio lawn dart.
Yeah. Perfect example of the NWO.
I got your back.
We actually got to see it. We go back there and Jimmy Hart, we need somebody in the back. And this is the heels and the baby faces all run back there. And Arn Anderson's down and Bagwell. And they take out Scotty Riggs and Mysterio. Wanted to be thrown through the window for some reason. But,
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've never heard that story before. By the way, I loved sidebar. Hold that thought. The WCW series, which we will talk about next before we get into Historian. But I love the part that an article had to come out explaining how high Nash was during the interviews. Oh, no shit.
Really?
I needed that news report. No, was he? I couldn't tell. But I love that he had to explain to Ray, no, I'm not going to throw you through a window. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to throw you against the wall. Just do this. Trust me. And I think that visual was even better.
It was even better. And even one of the results after that was when they were taking care of it, Ray was saying there were three guys. That was only the second appearance of Hall and Nash.
Yep.
There, or the third appearance, I'm sorry. And they were saying there was three.
Yeah.
Ray said there was three, and we'd only seen Hall and Nash. So that was the setup for Bash at the Beach. So, again, far
retrospect where you think that it's a mistake, but you're like, oh, no, that was on purpose.
Yeah.
They said that on purpose. Like Bobby going, yeah, but who's siding on? Bobby knows what he's doing. He did it on purpose, assholes. Come on. Yes. So I have to agree with you because, yes, I would have loved to have seen that instead of it's just happening. But the debut, nonetheless, though, because of a certain somebody.
But they have to think, what's next? Do we have to capitalize it? I don't want to see. We've gotten a month of QR codes and feeds and lights going out and stuff like that. But what are they? Where are they? Are they going to have a match? Are we going to get an introduction? I know they're playing the social media game and, you know, all the, I don't want the story to come out on, to come together on social media. I'd like an explanation.
Yeah.
Yes. Put on TV. Who are these people? Why are they here? Have an interview. Have Uncle Howdy introduce everyone. Something.
I am very happy though to see, God, what is it? A year and a half of buildup for this with or without the past. And let's just clarify, this is done in cooperation and with blessing from the Rotunda family. So stop talking, Twitter. You know who you are. You were told 4,000 times that it was approved and also who asked you. And you kept going, and then you were like, I'm so sad. They're making fun. Shut the fuck up then. Try that. Anyway, it was weird because it was weird. Mike Rotunda tweeted either as it was happening or right after. I wish Wyndham was here.
Yeah.
Of course, but oh, man. Yeah, this was going to happen regardless. So I really think the six is just, there's always going to be an open man form or missing man formation.
Yeah.
As we use military parlance, but, Joe Gacy, Nikki. Oh, that's what I was gonna say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back to my original point, Nikki off at the background, you'd see her every now and then you just see her smiling face staring at the camera. And you'd be like, what? Just disappear.
And she's got to
never see it again.
Yeah, she's gone through so many character changes. I hope this one sticks at least.
Still
for a while.
Nikki being crazy. Nikki.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
When she was with what group was she with Eric Young? That was my favorite.
One of the biggest Vince McMahon fuck letdowns I've ever seen.
Yes. Off that whole what stable should have come with the main roster. Wasn't the sickness, it was something. But yeah, they were and the fact it was just
there's another clusterfuck of a waste was Eric Young. Sanity.
Yeah. Sanity, yes, they were a great group. Next to
on screen.
Fuck.
Yeah, sorry, dude. I don't know what you I don't mean to leave you hanging.
Shock the system. What was there? Boom.
God. Why are we?
Adam Cole, baby, and Roderick, and Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly.
Undisputed era.
Undisputed. Yes. Next. Wow. 20 minutes ago, Sanity and Undisputed were my favorite groups in the NXT. Don't know why I couldn't think of that, but yeah,
because a lot's happened. You know, they originally pitched that to some guy that used to beat up his wife.
Oh yeah,
thank God.
Yeah.
I have a little PS to that, by the way, later. But
speaking of groups, I don't want to get to your PS, but speaking of groups that dropped that the WWE dropped the ball on, did you see the Twitter exchange with MVP and the fans?
No.
About about the Hurt Business?
No, but I guess we're gonna talk about it. Go ahead and lay it up, and I'm gonna go look at
you
it.
You go to MVP's Twitter handle or X handle, 305 MVP.
The 305. I know MVP's Twitter handle, buddy.
Okay. But he picture of the Hurt Business when they had all the gold. And say, I miss the Hurt Business. We ought to bring it back. And why don't they bring it back? They're in Triple H and Charlie. Why don't they bring it? You know, he brought everyone else back. Why not bring that back? And MVP just wrote back to this random fan who missed the Hurt Business, like we all do. Said, I already pitched it to Triple H, and he said no. And He said, then that was it. And people say, yeah, but you guys were champions all the time. He goes, I know. That was during the McMahon era. And they asked Triple H, and he said no. And then that started a whole backlash of, you know, well, you know, even if McMahon's gone, the WWE is still racist. And then someone pointed out that Carmelo Hayes got the jobber's entrance. Like, he was never introduced in the Money in the Bank qualifying match. He was just in the ring when the match started, even though he won the damn thing. So it's that's starting up again. But they're not helping. Yeah, MVP, to his credit, answered every fan that or practically every fan that commented on how much they miss the Hurt Business. He goes, yeah, I miss it too. And we said, yeah, it was brought up to Triple H, and he said no. The MVP, still employed by the WWE, was not let go, unlike a lot of people.
Is he working there still, or is not now?
Yes. No, he still is, and so is Cedric, yeah. And so is Shelton's the only one that's gone. And he hasn't shown up on AEW as much as a lot of people thought he would. But he said MVP said it was brought up to Triple H about reuniting their business, and he said no.
Shane Helms still has me blocked. What the fuck? I'm blocked by the Hurricane on Twitter. That's so funny.
What's up with that?
He says nice. He said something. Hey, it sucks because I liked him, and I said. He said something really, really douchey about ADHD and how it's not a real thing, and just calm down, as if he just said, just take a chill, just relax. And I said, oh, that's real mature to say to all your fans. That's great. Thanks, bud. And he blocked me. I might have dropped an F-bomb, but he's a fucking adult.
Exactly.
We both could only have one. We chose Cedric because we felt... So anyway, I always thought Ricky O would be a big star. I can't find the original tweets, but I'm at the interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's stupid, Trips. Paul, can I call you that? can you bring them back, please?
Yes. I would take them as the World Tag Team Champions over either Austin Theory and Grayson Waller or Truth and Miz. Please.
Well, there's a lot of things I would take over off to Theory, you know, paint chips.
No, Theory is your main event heel. He should be getting a Braun Breaker type push. He's your guy.
So let's talk about WCW.
Okay, who killed it, Dan?
Who gives a shit? No, it's funny because honestly, Craig, I was going to skip out on it.
Okay.
No interest in reliving it for the 400th time. I really didn't. It wasn't one of those, I'm just not going to do it. I was like, it doesn't matter anymore. It didn't matter 10 years ago. It was still fun to talk about. And then, of course, I watched the series, and there's a bunch of shit I haven't seen before. So as a nerd, I was like, all right, cool, take that. And I think Kevin Nash high as a kite. I would like that as a series, please. You know how they had on Netflix or Hulu, they had Rick Rubin and McCartney?
Yeah,
a little mini series. Can we just cut that in? Can we just cut that up? Nash high, mm-hmm. or to steal a line from McCartney, Nash high, high, high.
Yes.
But no, the series is wonderfully done. I haven't seen episode 3 yet, but I really thought going into this that I was gonna be like, yeah, I do all that.
No, yeah, please see episode 3 only to just. If you really want to get angry.
I don't.
Because episode 3. Shit. Yes, it's the Vince Russo.
I know. Shit. You didn't see my tweet where I was very fucking proud of this tweet and it didn't get any traction. I wasn't doing it for clout because fuck Vince Russo and I really don't give a shit. And also fuck Glenn. Yeah. And who else is licking his armpits? I don't know.
Ed Ferrara.
Well, who's. Is Ed Ferrara still up his ass? Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck off, Oklahoma. I had to endure you for months. Could you shut up, please? Oh, my God. Who tweeted it? A current wrestler tweeted Vince Russo something, and somebody, without tagging him, and somebody snitch tagged Russo going, yo, you hear this, big man? And I said, the fuck is, and I said verbatim, what the fuck is Vince Russo going to do? Bro him to death? Nothing. Not a goddamn thing. I'm like, fuck you. That's funny. Even the guy that doesn't agree with me, I'm like, come on. Come on. That's funny.
Not that's a thing. Gold, Jared.
Didn't get a good. Let me find that. Hold on. I want to see who I said that to. There it is. Oh, Dijak.
Okay.
Vince Russo and Austin Reeves, a couple of bitches, if I'm being honest, because they were both trending on it. Why am I? I'll just show you. What am I doing? I'll just show you on the stream. What an idiot. Ah. Oh, close that, buddy. Okay, so there you go. The first tweet right there, Dijak, Vince Russo, and Austin Reeves, a couple of bitches, if I'm being honest. Which, all right, sure. But that was because they were both trending.
Yeah.
So I don't know who that is. I guess he's a Twitch streamer. My voice is cracking. I guess he's a Twitch streamer. Mm-hmm. But he tags Russo. You gonna take that disrespect, bro? So I said, the fuck is Vince Russo gonna do? Throw him to death?
Throw him to death.
That's a good line. Screw you guys.
That is a good line.
Oh, screw you guys
and killing him.
Well, seriously, what's he gonna do? Stand in front of Dijak? Go, bro, 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 bro,
bro,
bro, bro, bro, bro, bro, bro, bro. Bro, bro, I'm just saying, bro, 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 bro.
Well, then you definitely shouldn't watch episode 3 then.
Oh, I can't. No, I'm going to have to. I'm fucking heart. If you hear that I'm dead of a heart attack, you'll know why. There was a time where I could at least sit through his bull. People always say Cornette's has become an animated version of himself. What the fuck is Vince Russo?
Well, see, what makes Russo so damn annoying, and still to this day, he doesn't know shit.
Sorry,
he doesn't know shit, and he's still convinced that he knows shit, and he's still completely, arrogantly unapologetic for the role he played in the demise of WCW getting killed, and you know who killed WCW? When I first heard this is going to be a series, I thought, okay, well, which time? Because Jim Herd did it in 1989.
We're on 5 deaths right now, dude.
Yeah. I mean, the
6 with WWE. Sorry.
RoboCop, El Gigante. The Ding Dongs. That killed WCW way before Hogan even
said. We'll call this one Ding, we'll call the other one Dong.
but for this series, it's still fascinating, and to get the people that they did get, Kevin Nash, but namely Bret Hart, calling everyone idiots, which is still my favorite part of the whole documentary. But it's
angry Bret Hart is one of my favorite things ever.
Oh, still and telling, and even Goldberg, his. Goldberg went from heel, you know, because he's still, you know, about, he's like so tired of hearing about how he ended Bret Hart's career. But in part 3, he turns face because he agrees that Vince Russo was a shit stain. So, but yeah, still Russo completely unapologetic.
No, I'm on a fuck Bill Goldberg thing now. What a, like, where did that brain go? Like, what happened to that guy? I thought Brett got kicked in the head.
Well, with Goldberg, and I always reserve judgment on him because this is a guy who didn't want any of this. He never wanted to be a wrestler. He never wanted to be famous. He saw this as a way of, you know, to make a living, not unlike the Ultimate Warrior did. It was never his dream. Unlike the Warrior, though, he did try. But like the Ultimate Warrior, he didn't get better. And he admitted, even in episode 2, like, I don't know. In the match with Scott Hall, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know shit.
Maybe he's strangling. Maybe he's asking you what the fuck is going on because
he tries to defend himself about the Bret Hart, he says he told Bret, watch out for the kick. But if you're Brett, kick from where? Kick from when? What are you going to kick me low in the stomach, or like what kick am I supposed to look out for? So, again, that didn't help. and Bret Hart, who's, you know, the consummate professional, who's never hurt anyone in his entire life, who goes by the edict, you don't hurt your opponent, no matter who it is, whether you like him or not. If Bret Hart never hurt Shawn Michaels, why the fuck would he, you know,
hurt? You know, you make a good point.
Want to hurt anyone else. So he just said to Bill, don't hurt me. That's all. And he said it to anyone that he knew was green or working with for the first time.
I give Bret Hart some shit after reading his book. Like, I think the book was supposed to help me respect him. I lost a little bit of respect for Bret as far as a personal family man kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And man, he liked to talk about how great he was, but well, that's because he is, you know?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Because I do roll my eyes sometimes when Brett's talking about things, but then when he's talking, I'm like, well, no, because he's that good. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. Yeah.
And Brett, to his credit, though, gives credit where it's due to other people that helped him and that he respected, like a Steve Austin and like even someone like Ricky Steamboat. You know, he had nothing but good thing. Kurt Hennig, he adored Kurt Hennig. He loved working with Kurt Hennig, and talks about how good and how great he was. So as much as Brett puts himself over, Brett put others over just as much, you know. And the people that he didn't have anything nice to say about, he didn't say a whole lot. I mean, Goldberg's the only one he degraded, but he didn't say anything bad about Kevin Nash or Scott Hall. But I know they weren't his
favorites to work with. And they were begging for it.
Yeah. But, see the third episode, please. I'd love to hear your
I definitely will. We'll wrap the whole thing. How many episodes are there?
There's four. The last one is going to end tomorrow.
Yeah, so next episode, we'll get the whole
Speaking
thing.
In that vein, have you been watching any of the A&E biographies on...
God, absolutely.
Some of them. They did last week was the ECW retrospect. The week before that was Ricky Steamboat. This past Sunday was Rob Van Dam, which was really good. So yes, look at the A&E biographies. He talked about his whole rise and stuff. I didn't even know. I didn't see. I knew that he was the kid that kissed Ted DiBiase's feet when he was 17, but I didn't know that he, when the DiBiase, when he was doing house shows, and he went to Michigan, and he saw their stock footage of Rob Van, 17-year-old Rob Sikowski, in the audience, and he said, "You come in," and he jumped the rail and climbed through the ropes before security could even grab him. You see security trying to. But he just jumped in the ring and kissed Ted DiBiase's feet, even touched Virgil on the arm because he was just so happy to be there. And that got played, you know, throughout WWF syndication. But yeah, he said, I got to find out how to get into this business. And he trained with a professional kickboxer. He didn't train to wrestle for about a year. He kickboxed and was in tough man competitions when he was 15 years old. You know, going to the ring against grown men. So he got really tough, you know, taking, you know, shots and kicks and everything. And he tried every single name, you know, Robbie Z, Robbie V, Rob Zikowski. They skipped over his WCW, his first run in WCW, and he was Robbie V. Went straight to when he wrestled in Japan to him going to ECW. And but Paul... Kevin Owens, Bubba Ray, all talked about Rob Van Dam, and he was the most valuable player there in ECW, and how he didn't want to go anywhere else. He wanted, especially when everyone started leaving. He said he wanted it was a big thing to him to get people to come see him, to come to where he was wrestling rather than to go to WCW or WWE. And he didn't finally go until ECW folded. But it was fascinating. The Ricky Steamboat one. And here's someone I thought I'd seen everything on Ricky Steamboat. I had no idea they had stock footage of him. His mother was Japanese and his father was American. And mm-hmm. when he wrestled in Japan the first time, it was Giant Baba that took it upon himself to find Ricky Steamboat's mom's parents, because she hadn't seen them since she came to America. And so Giant Baba organized that and had Ricky Steamboat's mom reunite with her family that she hadn't seen.
Wow.
It was really great stuff. And of course, his during the feud with Flair, and going to the WWF, why he lost the Intercontinental title when he just asked for 2 weeks off, and 2 weeks
Vince turned is into a twat.
Yeah, and 2 weeks turned into 6 months. It was weird, and I still don't, because I want to take 2 weeks off because the birth of my son, and I'll be right back. And Vince apparently said we can't have you gone for 2 weeks, but it's like they taped everything like months in advance, so like no one's gonna miss Ricky Steamboat for 2 weeks, especially when you tape house shows and you're in. You still had Hogan and Savage and all these other big stars and Andre. So what difference would it make? So no, we're gonna get the belt off you, and he never got it again. But it was really, really good stuff. And of course, the platitudes from every single wrestler that ever knew him or been in the ring with him, that he was Mr. Perfect, with no offense to Kurt Hennig. And to his marriage now, he's racing cars. He owns like a stock cars. Yes, he lives in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean it's but it's really good. But yeah, these A&E biographies, I said on this very podcast how I've seen them. Even the stories I've known, like the Steve Austin ones or the Mick Foley's. Like, yeah, I get it, but the ones we don't know, Ricky Steamboat, Rob Van Dam's, even the ECW, when they did a whole episode on ECW, and they talked to everyone, Bubba, Devon, Tommy Dreamer, about how it started and and the stock footage stuff I hadn't seen, all the way up to Paul Heyman's Hall of Fame speech. It was again really, really good. And Steve Austin even commented how ECW saved his career, made his career. So while you perused Who Killed WCW, please go back and watch the A&E biographies.
Yeah, I was looking for the trailer to put video to this, but I can't goddamn find it. So
goddamn it.
But damn it.
Yes. Yeah, definitely worth watching.
Like, they have the Undertaker's full episode on here, but I can't get 30-second clip of Steamboat's.
Ugh.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'll watch it. I have A&E, but
yes, please do. Please do. Steamboat to me. Steamboat to me is a Willie Mays of professional wrestling. A guy who can just do everything and just almost like practically flawless in the ring.
What a reference.
Well, yeah.
Do you have historian stuff?
Oh yeah, because this was we talked about a lot of the stuff we already talked about in the present day, and the far-reaching aspects of the past meets the present. Because today and the last couple of days have been very historic in professional wrestling. As we go back in the day, in the week that was. In professional wrestling, some major things took place, far-reaching implications on this day and previous days in professional wrestling history that were still, guys that we've talked about already in this podcast, made a huge impact in wrestling history on these dates in professional wrestling history. And say I'm talking professional wrestling, not sports entertainment, folks, because this is about men and women in the squared circle before the internet, before cable television, when you had to tape trade with other people on things called VHS to make sure that it actually happened, the word of mouth, and history was made. And this, gentlemen and ladies, is the wrestling historian. On this date in this week in pro wrestling history. We're going back to June 21st, 1981, in the Omni in Atlanta. Dusty Rhodes would defeat Harley Race for his second NWA Heavyweight Championship. Not as big as the first, a much bigger crowd in the Omni in Atlanta for a very surprising title change. Dusty Rhodes and Harley Race had been up and down the road for 2 years. Maybe longer than that. Dusty won his first title in 1979, only held it for 5 days. But this time, beating Harley Race clean with a flying body press off the top rope. Big 300-pound Dusty coming on the chest of Harley Race and winning for the second time the NWA Heavyweight Championship. This will be the, out of Dusty's three reigns, it will be the longest reign he ever had, holding it from June 21st to September 17th, 1981. That, of course, would start the first reign of the most decorated world champion in history, Ric Flair. But Dusty would hold it for this the longest time, June 21st, 1981, in the Omni in Atlanta. It'd be the last time Dusty would hold the 10 pounds of gold. The next time he would hold it would be the big gold belt. But this was at a time where the NWA was looking to get younger. Dusty was going to be a transitional champion. And some of the names bandied about to who would be the next world champion were Ted DiBiase, Ric Flair, of course, and David Von Erich. Flair would eventually win out, and obviously Ted DiBiase's name was brought up quite a bit, and so was David Von Erich's later on. But Dusty would win his second and hold the NWA title for the longest time, June 21st, 1981.
By the way, this is how I stave off copyright. I just show pictures instead of video.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Oh, man, it looks so good. I was so happy. And then as soon as the upload was done, it was like, copyright violations, 18. Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Never mind. Sorry.
It was more than I do. This one was different. You know, when Dusty won his first NWA title, and because it was his first one in his hometown or home base of Tampa, in Tampa and Florida, the fans rushed the ring organically and mobbed him. And it was such a joyous occasion. And this one, after he won, he was asking the fans, telling the fans, come in the ring, come in the ring. He wanted to recreate that moment from 1979 because it was such a much bigger crowd. And it worked because it was Dusty. But the first time, it was just organic. This one, it felt like force, like he was yelling, come in, come in, come in, come in the ring, surround me.
But again, everybody come around me. I need just to look good in the magazines.
It's like a sitcom's emotional pictures, baby.
How the fuck are you all fucking this up so bad? Get Jesus Christ. Come on.
Speaking of the aforementioned Ted DiBiase, one of the people on the short list to eventually become NWA champions. June 23rd, 1982, Ted DiBiase would win the North American Heavyweight Championship from his best friend, the man that was legitimately the best man in his wedding, Junkyard Dog, for the North American Heavyweight Championship. This came about because the Junkyard Dog was facing Bob Roop for the North American Heavyweight Champion. Dog, the biggest face in the company, heel. Bob Roop, the biggest heel. And they had a loser leave town match signed for June 23rd, 1982. Well, unbeknownst to both of those men, Ted DiBiase signed for the North American Heavyweight Championship against Bob Roop and for it to be a loser leave town match. Well, Junkyard Dog defeated Bob Roop 2 days earlier to win the North American Championship. So now, to honor the contract, Ted DiBiase signed a contract to face a North American champion, no matter who it was, and it turned out to be his best friend, Junkyard Dog. And DiBiase, the number two babyface, had to face against the number one babyface, and neither man wanted it, but Junkyard Dog said DiBiase's a man of his word. He's not going back on this, and neither am I, so we're for the North American Championship, and a loser, whoever, must leave town. But I'm to say I want to wrestle my best friend, I'd be lying. I don't. Ted DiBiase is my best friend, and he's a good man. But may the best man win. So they had their match, Scientific. They called it back then. And that's Junk JYD's promo. Ted DiBiase reluctantly accepting the cheers of the fans. And during the match, they were going back and forth, very clean. And Ted DiBiase was accidentally knocked out of the ring. And Junkyard Dog said, I'm so sorry. And he held the ropes open for him. What people didn't know was Ted DiBiase had went into his tights and pulled out a loaded glove, a fingerless loaded glove. He came back in the ring. He's helping Ted DiBiase back in the ring.
I got your back.
And then just knocked him out of nowhere.
Boom.
And covered him 1, 2, 3. And to put it over, Bob Roop, the number one heel in the company, put it over with saying Ted DiBiase, no, he had to have something that loaded glove. Nobody can knock the Junkyard Dog out with one punch. That DiBiase's a snake. How could he? And this is a heel talking. So with that punch heard around the world, or at least heard around the Mid-South, Ted DiBiase would not only win the North American Heavyweight Championship, but he would send the most popular wrestler in Mid-South history out of the territory for 30 days. Because it was a loser leave town match.
Son of a bitch, Ted.
And that, June 23rd, 1982, was the first time Ted DiBiase turned heel.
Oh.
And he'd go on to
be. I didn't realize it was that significant, sir.
One of the greatest heels in the history of professional wrestling. But it happened June 23rd, 1982, right there, right then and there. Wow. And he would never look back.
This week, we're going to try the smaller windows of video, see if we can skip it that way. Because I don't want money from this. I just want a visual aid for people that are tuning going, oh, they're going to show clips? Cool.
Yeah.
Or should I do the Vice thing and just put like lines all over it and shake the cam a little bit? No, I recorded those off my VCR. Which, by the way, apparently nobody on Raw knows how to fucking say VCR. It's VHS player. Oh, you motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Michael Cole's old. How do we not know it's a VCR? Sorry.
That's okay. You know, there's still some Vince-isms in there. It's like, I don't know why they still say title opportunity, not title shot. I mean, he's gone. He can't hear you. You can say title shot. You could say VCR. It's not really, we know what they are. You don't have to. Anyway, but staying on that date, June 23rd, Ted DiBiase turned heel. But I'm going to show you, Dan, illustrate to you in 2 years how much the business can change and can change the fortune of two wrestlers. June 23rd, 1994, WCW held its 27th Clash of the Champions, and the WCW champion, Ric Flair.
Wait, hold that thought. Good shit, Cal. There she bears just won another fucking Calder Cup in OT.
Oh,
sorry. I'm sorry, dude. That was legit. They were so OT happened. Sorry, folks. OT happened, and the Firebirds. This is a rematch from last year, the AHL Championship Calder Cup, which the Phantoms have held twice. To be fair to the Phantoms, they've only been to the finals twice, so they have a two, and they're 2 for 2. So at least it's not that bad. They didn't lose 58 times. So they go into overtime, and the Firebirds are just up their ass in the zone. I look down. I get ready to type in Clash Champions 27. I look up, the puck's behind the net, and they won. Sorry. I'm sorry. That was a legit reaction. I apologize. We're going to keep that in, and we're talking about Clash of Champions 27. Go, sir.
In that Clash of Champions, the international champion Sting would lose to the WCW champion Ric Flair to unify the world titles. But I'm pointing this out because on the undercard of that Clash of Champions, June 23rd, 1994, Johnny B. Bad would defeat Stunning Steve.
Yep, I knew. I fucking knew it.
Exactly 2 years later, to the day, June 23rd, 1996, the WWF King of the Ring and Stone Cold Steve Austin would defeat Mark Marrow in a reversal of fortune. Exactly 2 years earlier, they were on the Clash of Champions undercard.
Holy shit, I didn't realize how.
And exactly 2 years later.
Wow.
Stone Cold, the receipt, Stone Cold would defeat Mark Marrow. That was the same match that Austin got 16 stitches in his lip. He got an Aaron elbow. He would leave the arena, get stitched up, and come back for the final and defeat Jake the Snake Roberts. And be interviewed post-match by Michael Hayes and would immortal the historic, iconic line for the first time. You say you're John 316. Well, Austin 316 means I just whipped your ass. And Austin 316 was born.
And his lip was three times sizes that day.
Yep. But yeah, so 2 years earlier, Johnny B. Bad defeats Stunning Steve. But Stone Cold Steve Austin would get the last laugh on Mark Marrow. And two careers went two completely opposite directions after that.
I put these in your notes somewhere, please. And I will put one in mine, but you'll probably remember this. When we have a slow night, like an actual slow night, because every night we go on, I'm like, it's not going to be long. And we're in 2 hours later. What the fuck happened and what did they do to Mark Marrow? I mean, I know what they did, but I want to make that a podcast.
Okay.
And yes. Her name is Sable, bitch.
No, I can tell you exactly why, you know, what happened to Mark Marrow. Yeah, well, we'll save it for the
separate show. I want to talk about his whole career because, you know, we could both agree that Johnny B. Bad is doesn't age great. Mm-mm. Doesn't age at all. Much like his face full of Botox, but he's a white man. And yeah, but the man was an incredible wrestler. And then anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Which brings us to today in wrestling history. Today in wrestling history, a date or an event that gets not taken for granted, because obviously if you were there, it was a big deal. But it's hard to believe it was 52 years ago today that the very first Parade of Champions took place in Texas Stadium. The NWA champion Dory Funk Jr. went to a 60-minute draw with Fritz Von Erich, and that event drew 26,339 fans to Texas Stadium in 1972. $150,000 gate for 1972. So that was the first Parade of Champions at Texas Stadium, an event that Fritz Von Erich would bring back. For his retirement match in 1982 versus a King Kong Bundy with hair. And again, famously in 1984 with his son Kerry winning the NWA championship from Ric Flair. But the very first
footage of this one at all.
Yeah, because it doesn't exist, again, unless you were there. Wow. And, but I wanted to make it a part of the wrestling historian because it is a part of wrestling history, because the Parade of Champions in Texas Stadium has a rich tradition in professional wrestling because of, you know, of Kerry's win, but because it was a staple in Texas and it was something that the NWA champion would be a part of and has been a part of every time there was a Parade of Champions in Texas Stadium. And they stopped numbering them because they couldn't do it every year.
In fact,
the Parade of Champions 84 was the first one since 82 when Fritz retired, because the idea would be that was Fritz's last match, that would be the last Parade of Champions, but only because of the success of world-class wrestling, the immense popularity of it, and they had a match that needed a stadium. It was supposed to be, obviously, David Von Erich versus Ric Flair. But due to his death and the tremendous outpouring of emotion. It was Carrie's turn to challenge for the NWA title in May 6, 1984. He did it in front of a then record crowd, the biggest crowd to ever see a wrestling match in North America, 44,511 in Texas Stadium, May 6, 1984. That's what made Parade of Champions part of wrestling history. And like I said, at the time, it was the largest crowd to ever see a wrestling match in North America. And it held the record until WrestleMania 3.
I was going to say one of the WrestleManias, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course it would be 3, yeah.
Yeah.
Duh. There's the Sheik.
That's all.
I can find stuff from Fritz wrestling in 69, you know, 50s, 60s, nothing from 72. It does not exist. Yeah.
Can you find the Fritz Von Erich versus King Kong Bundy from the
yeah, give me a second. I'll pull it up.
1982.
Let me see, yeah.
Parade of Champions.
Fritz Von Erich versus King Kong Bundy with hair. I'm going to type that in. Where are you, bitch?
And what made it great was David came back for that match, and David was a heel in Florida at the time because they were setting – this is when talks were set up for him to eventually be NWA champion because he would go back to wrestle in Florida as a heel, which is what the NWA champion would do. You'd be a face in some place. Like Flair, when he was NWA champion, was a face in Mid-Atlantic, but it was a heel everywhere else. David was going to be a heel in Florida and a face everywhere else. And here we see King Kong Bundy with hair wrestling against – he was a main event. He was the main event at Texas Stadium. And this is only his second year in the big leagues. But yeah. Fritz Von Erich tapped him to be his final opponent for his final match. So there's a trivia question for you. Who was Fritz Von Erich's last – singles match with Ooh. King Kong Bundy
with hand. If you're gonna pick him,
yeah. But this match, and this is even in 1982, again before cable TV, put Bundy on the map because Fritz still had a lot of weight, and after this, Bundy could write his own ticket, and you could see
it's pretty much sky's the limit for Bundy after that, yeah,
yeah. And he went to Georgia, Mid-South, and became main event guy throughout the territories.
That's not bad for a nice little Jersey boy.
Not bad for a Jersey boy at all. Thank you, Larry Sharp, even though Ernie Ladd didn't like him too much in Mid-South. Bundy, you big fat piece of shit.
Oh, there we go.
We bring guys in to get you over, and what do? You dumb yourself right out of position.
Bundy, you big, dumb, fat piece of shit. What was Bundy going to do? Nothing?
Exactly.
Sorry.
Nothing.
Sorry.
Things, nothing I like it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Ladd. Sorry, bud. Yeah, you are.
You're the sorriest thing I ever saw. Oh, there, man, you see the Iron voice. Claw. Yeah. The end of this match when Fritz wins and all his family joins him in the ring, like I said, including David, who was a heel. That's the final shot you see in the movie The Iron Claw. That was from this show in Texas Stadium, where Fritz beat King Kong Bundy to win his last match. And the match took place this match took place in the end zone.
Yeah.
See, there's Mike.
I mean, it ended in David. The end zone.
Yeah, and there's Kevin. There, that's a shot right there. That was the last shot you saw on Iron Claw, and you see the fans again. Everyone standing, cheering. For the love of the Von Erich.
By the way, for those who are not watching and they're just listening, we're talking about Texas Stadium, i.e., also known as Cowboy Stadium.
Yes,
that's how big this sucker is. Just to drive the point home. Again, of how big world-class Fritz the Von Erichs were. Big. Yeah,
big. And again, this is 1982. This is 2 years before they went world, they went global, worldwide syndicated stuff. So yeah, again, wrestling was, this was bigger than, they were the biggest wrestling company in the, they were the most popular company in the NWA. They were outdrawing the WWF by leaps and bounds at this point. They were probably neck and neck with, because Snuka had been, had started in the WWF, so they were doing that. He was drawing huge houses, but they were definitely outdrawing the AWA. But yeah, the world class in the most popular territory in the NWA at the time. But yes, the first Parade of Champions, however, took place today in 1972. And the Parade of Champions was always going to be known as one of the great events in wrestling history. And that, gentlemen and ladies, is a wrestling historian.
Well, Craig, we've come to the end. It's where we put our shoes back on, get the sweater.
Put my pants back on.
Put my pants back on. I haven't worn pants in 14 hours. Just been hot dogging it, commandoing it on this really warm chair. And the dog keeps staring at me, so that's weird. I'm wearing pants, folks, as far as you know. And that's all you need to know. Where can people follow you?
They can follow me with or without pants on Facebook, Instagram, X, Threads, and anywhere else where fine ladies' garments are sold. At Craig Ligons, CraigLigons.
Used to be a time where when you would say that, I would type it slowly because I'm like, man, he says it to me every day. I'm going to make sure I type this right. Now I just like type it my name. I don't got to double check. How do you spell your name? Smith.
Smith.
I am on Blue Sky Mastodon. Ooh, Mastodon. Ooh, boy. Blue Sky Mastodon. The fuck am I on? Instagram, Threads. Your Mother's Dreams, Facebook, DanLaw83, HIACTalkRadio.com, YouTube.com/DanLaw83, or YouTube, or just type in HIAC Talk Radio Pro, HIAC Talk Radio, just type that in and fucking YouTube, you find it, for Christ's sake. But give us a holler, give us a listen. We're fully interactive now. We have clips until we get, you know, the episode pulled again. But I kept them small, maybe, you know. Some of you will understand small. The angry ones about the Acolyte, you'll understand.
Fine. Definitely.
For Craig Ligons, I am the above average comedian, which still fools him every time. Oh, you think you're funny? No, that's the... Oh, boy. Oh, man. Above average, dude. You know what that means? Anyway, you're stupid. for Craig Ligons, I'm Dan Colchico. And to you very angry men children... Keep it on the paper, won't you?